Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Every year, thousands of people and corporations apply for patents to protect their inventions from competitors. Today, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office oversees more than 6 million patents. The first one went to a Vermont farmer who figured out how to make potash, an agricultural fertilizer, back in 1790.
It was that important to our founding fathers that we have a system that promoted American innovation. And it's my understanding that the first patent examiner was Thomas Jefferson, who kept patent applications in a shoebox, is what the story is told.
That's Michelle Lee, the current director of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and the first female to hold that position. And no, she doesn't keep patents in a shoebox anymore, but she does oversee an agency with 12,000 employees and an annual budget of more than $3 billion. She's in town today to give a lecture at her alma mater, MIT, amidst growing debate about the need to reform the U.S. patent system. We caught up with her yesterday in South Boston to talk about that, how she became the nation's top patent lawyer, and exactly what the USPTO does. I hope it's okay that I say this. It's fair to say that the average American probably doesn't spend a lot of time thinking about what your very important office does. So sum it up, if you could.
Well, that may be true, but I'd like a lot more Americans to be thinking about and knowing about what we do. So the United States Patent and Trademark Office is one of the largest intellectual property offices in the world. And its purpose at the highest level is really to promote American innovation through intellectual property rights.
Mm. Let me ask you about this. There's been a lot of debate about the need for patent reform, and there's tension around this. There are companies like big pharmaceutical companies that want strict patent protection to protect their products, to protect their profits. Tech companies, on the other hand, sometimes see patents as a barrier to innovation. So how do you see your job as resolve this tension?
Well, I play a role in it. I mean, obviously, there is legislation being considered before Congress now addressing some of the issues that you raise. And it's critically important that that intellectual property system and the laws are balanced to promote American innovation. So strong enough to incentivize the invention so that the inventors can recoup their hard work and their investment, but also the ability for others to provide follow-on innovations and improvements, which is exactly what our founding fathers intended. Mm. And then you also want the ability for holders of patent rights to be able to enforce against infringers when need be.
Right, right. So one of the issues that comes up, there's this conversation around so-called patent trolls, and these are firms that acquire other companies' patents, not to create products necessarily, but to sue or extract licensing fees from companies that might be infringing on those patents. Even President Obama talked about this in one of his State of the Union addresses. What's your view on this issue?
So I don't like to use the word patent trolls because nobody knows what the term patent troll means. If you ask 8 people their definition of patent troll, I am sure you will get 8 different answers. We should be focused on curtailing abusive patent litigation, whether that occurs by the patent owner, the plaintiff, or the defendant.
Well, what about this kind of abuse that I just outlined? I mean, we don't have to call them patent trolls, but what's the best way toward reforming that?
We want to make sure we are issuing patents that are absolutely accurate and as clear as possible so as not to provide the opportunity for abusive litigation where patents can be stretched to cover industries and products and services that were not meant to be covered.
Sure.
Legislation is being considered. And the courts are also right now undergoing a lot of change in terms of case law development, mm-hmm. such as when attorney's fees are awarded in patent litigation cases, that will also have an impact. So really, everybody, every branch of government working together has an appropriate role to play, and the USPTO is playing a role in it.
Michelle Lee, if I may, I'd love to ask you a little bit about your background because you have an interesting story that brought you to this point. I mean, first of all, you're sort of historic. You're the first female director of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. I'd love to ask you about that glass ceiling that you shattered in a way. Why so few women in patent law, though, first of all?
So the patent office, as I mentioned, goes back to probably around 1790. It took a little while to get the first woman head, but I'm delighted and I'm honored to be the first woman head of the United States Patent and Trademark Office. I think there are a number of factors. To be in the patent field, it helps to have a technical background. And we all know the statistics, right? You have fewer women entering the STEM professions. And one of the initiatives that I care very deeply about is promoting and encouraging more women and girls to become interested in, to study science, technology, engineering, and math, because you can't afford to leave an inventor or innovator behind. You never know who's going to start that next company that's going to revolutionize the world and the way in which we live.
Well, speaking of interest and a passion for science and technology, tell me a little bit about your childhood. You grew up in Saratoga, California, the daughter of Chinese immigrants. Where did this love of science and technology come from? Where was it born?
So I grew up in the heart of the Silicon Valley. My dad, an electrical engineer, and my mom a scientist, and I can remember my dad and I, we built a handheld radio, and we helped install the burglar alarm that was in our house, and I just thought that's what all girls did at a young age, and I kind of realized over time that that's not what they did. But it was great. I mean, growing up in the heart of the Silicon Valley, seeing the dads, many of them, come up with clever inventions, file for a patent, use that patent to obtain venture capital funding, to start companies, to bring that patented technology to the marketplace. I mean, some of those companies failed. Some of them succeeded, and for a small number that did succeed, some of them revolutionized the world in the way in which we live.
You came to MIT to study computer science, but then, if I understand this correctly, on a whim, you decided to sit in on a Harvard Law School class, right?
Yes.
More or less?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
What drew you over there? I mean, what happened? What was the result of that whim?
Well, I don't know if you remember this, but at the time, there was a very interesting case, the Apple versus Microsoft case. And It had to do with the extent to which things like the scroll bar and the icons and the trash can of a graphical user interface on a computer were protectable by copyright law. And there's no answer to that. In the case law, talks about protection of written expression, musical compositions. So all these new issues, and I thought, you know what, I think it would be interesting to help shape the contours and develop policies and case law decisions that can incentivize innovation, or they can also quash innovation, depending upon which way they come out. So that's a pretty important aspect to get right.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you about one more chapter in your career. But in 2003, you were working at what was at the time a small internet search company called Google, right? You became the first head of patents and patent strategy there. And I'm just curious, when you started at Google back then, was it clear to you that Google was on its way to becoming Google?
I wish I could say I had such foresight. But you have to keep in mind, at that time, we were in the middle of the dot-com bust.
Right.
And if you think back, think of all the search engine companies that existed. Ask Jeeves, Alta Vista, Excite at Home, Yahoo, Microsoft, right? And Google. I can't say I knew. I wish I... Yeah, I really knew.
Well, with the benefit of hindsight, and I appreciate what you said about the dot-com bust, and there were a lot of search engine companies, and Google emerged. With the benefit of hindsight, why? What did Google have right that these other companies didn't?
Well, as head of patents and patent strategy, I like to think that their intellectual property played a role in it. But it's many factors, yeah. Right? It's always top engineering talent, being decisive, executing quickly, executing well. The thing about it is that our economy and companies in general across the globe, I mean, it's such a competitive environment. And just because you're the big company X years ago, there is no guarantee that you will continue to even exist in the future unless you continue to innovate, invent, and move forward.
Michelle Lee, Undersecretary of Commerce for Intellectual Property and Director of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Michelle Lee is going to be delivering a lecture at her alma mater to MIT this afternoon.